Welcome to the CRA Podcast, a podcast committed to highlighting the great work across the nation in transforming communities through the power of economic development and the Community Reinvestment Act. For this episode of the CRA Podcast, I'm interviewing Marissa Calderon, NCRC's Community Development Fund Executive Director. She's also the Chief of Community Finance and Mobility of NCRC, the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. During this interview, we'll talk about NCRC and the Community Development Fund and how the fund furthers its mission and impact in disadvantaged communities. We'll also talk about bank and CDFI relationships and the possibility of referral programs and how the Community Development Fund is also supporting the CDFI industry by leveraging technology. So I hope you enjoy this episode full of community development, inspiration, and impact. Welcome to the CRA Podcast, Marissa.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Let's start by hearing a bit more about the history and mission of the Community Development Fund and your unique structure and relationship with NCRC.
The NCRC Community Development Fund, we're a U.S. Treasury certified CDF, a community development financial institution. And we were established in 2007 by NCRC. The National Community Reinvestment Coalition is our parent company. And we were certified in 2012 by the U.S. Treasury. Our mission is to help bridge the racial wealth divide by supporting entrepreneurship and affordable homeownership in America's underserved community. And I like to think of the NCRC Community Development Fund as a practical application of NCRC's overall mission for the ecosystem of the entities within the organization. And our work is meant to have a direct impact on bridging the racial wealth gap.
Love the mission. And NCRC has proven to be a force in equity and inclusion over time. How does this Community Development Fund leverage capital to generate economic and social impact in these underserved communities?
Yeah, we focus on a multi-pronged approach. We support entrepreneurs and business owners through small business loans that we offer. They tend to be below market rate interest loans, term loans, and we help them with financing a variety of different financial needs, such as working capital, inventory, machinery, equipment, real estate. It's really the gamut of different kinds of needs that a small business would have. And we do that for both startups as well as established businesses. And we also work toward affordable home ownership by raising capital and deploying that capital to affordable developers who build properties intended for single family occupancy by folks who are wanting to purchase a home and who don't otherwise have necessarily means.
You started the fund more so about small business, and now you're expanding into homeownership. Is that the case?
We actually kind of did that in reverse. So the fund really began with a focus on homeownership with a unique partnership with an affordable developer partner. And we continue that affordable homeownership development work today in 20 different cities across the country in a number of different states. And we will continue to do that work. And we have really, over the last couple of years, built out our support services and lending capabilities for small businesses. And our support of small businesses is not just within the lending space, but also in terms of providing support or what most people within the industry talk about as technical assistance. We operate a couple of accelerators for small businesses as well.
And I think that there's maybe understanding sometimes about banks and CDFI relationships. Can you just touch upon this really quick about the sense of competition with banks, that you're really there to supplement and not compete? It's an extension of the availability of capital within communities.
It really is. CDFIs, certainly our CDFI, is not really intended to serve the same clients or customers that a bank would have. I like to think of the work that we do as part of an overall continuum. Many of the entrepreneurs, for example, that we serve either don't have a banking relationship or their credit profile is not something that would fit within the risk appetite of a bank. So we serve them in part to make sure that we meet the capital need And in part because we want to help them to migrate along that journey and to build a banking relationship. So we as an entity have relationships with a number of banking partners so that we can help to shepherd ARC into a banking relationship that works for them depending on whatever their unique needs are. So our goal is not to necessarily have forever clients, though we want to be a right fit for our clients. We want them to also have a good banking partner to serve their other needs, because ultimately we're not a depository, so we can't serve some of the banking needs that our customers would have.
It's such a beautiful win-win situation when you build acumen, pair it with capital, and have them enter into mainstream finance as a handoff too. So I understand you have an impressive vision to further serve low and moderate income neighborhoods and individuals, which also includes a few initiatives by leveraging technology to also support small CDFIs. So I want to hear more about that because it piqued my interest when we met a few weeks ago.
Yes, some of what I've noticed based on my own background is that within the CDFI space, there tends to be a lack of capital need to invest in CDFI's own internal technology infrastructure. And in some cases, there's a lack of the human resources that have maybe the knowledge or bandwidth to actually engage in that kind of work as well. And so for us, with our clients, and I think that most CDFIs notice this about their clients, they require the same sort of personal engagement that client wealth management clients require, but really CDFIs lack the resources to be able to engage with their clients to that degree of closeness at scale. What we began doing last year, initially we began on a process of trying to find the right technology to meet our own clients' needs. We weren't able to find a true end-to-end lending platform for our small business clients. We began developing it ourselves, and we're currently in beta testing on an end-to-end lending platform for our small business client need, which does include automation as well as AI. And by the end of this year in 2023, we will be able to welcome in CDFI members of the NCRC member network to begin beta testing to use the platform for their needs as well. Our intention really is to be able to provide clients of CDFIs, including our own, with the same level of care and attention that a high net worth individual would get at a bank partner, but at the sort of cost structure that a CDFI can afford, and with the equity lens, that's really something that should be part and parcel to the kind of work that we do.
Fascinating. Can you tell me just a little bit more about how you're integrating AI into that platform?
Yes. And so the AI that we're building in has that kind of equity lens that I mentioned, because essentially I think one of the concerns that many people have when they think about AI or machine learning or automation is that it by default introduces bias. And I think the reality is that we're all humans, some sort of bias exists irrespective of whether you use technology or not. And if we're attentive to how we build our underwriting guidelines, if our underwriting guidelines as a base are inclusive in and of themselves, then that helps to mitigate some of the, when you implement the sort of technology that I'm talking about. So really what we're looking at is this helps us to speed up decision-making for loan eligibility so that we can get essentially near instant conditional loan approvals, as well as once a conditional approval is reached, we can collect whatever documentation might be needed and only the documentation that's necessary, not maybe a plethora of things that aren't ultimately necessary to determine eligibility for a particular loan. So all of those components help to speed up decision making, helps to reduce the need for actual human staff. And where you do have human staff, it helps us to ensure that they're engaged in what I like to think of as knowledge or thought work, where a person's discretion and their kind of customer service human touch will help that transaction move forward.
Right. So automate with the access lens, right? Based on your mission.
That's right. And I think one of the things that we're certainly cautious of is not unintentionally declining a particular application that without proper consideration. So as we're going through this testing process, we do have a manual overview of any declines to ensure that there isn't something about that application that could have been viewed differently in a way that would appropriately qualify that application. And one other thing I would mention that's really critically important to us is, as a part of this process, is ensuring that ultimately the borrower has an ability to repay that loan. We consider that really core to our mission because as we open up access to credit, it doesn't just mean that everyone ought to get approved. It means that we take the responsibility of ensuring that our borrowers are actually appropriately in an ability to, in a position to repay that loan. And that if they're not, that means that's an opportunity for us to engage with them in some form of technical assistance so that we can put them in a position to be on a path to credit. So a no might not necessarily be a no, it might be not yet.
I love that you have a second look process because that's truly community development where you can look at the background information, underwriting criteria, but that human intervention is what's so beautiful about a second look. So what are the key challenges with the community development funds? What are you currently facing to really achieve your near-term goals?
Yeah, I think they're probably similar to what most CDFIs face. We all have a need for operating capital. As we look toward raising capital, it tends to be easier for us to raise debt capital for purposes of relending. It is to raise some form of operating capital and for a variety of reasons. So as we engage with potential funding sources, I like to describe for them why the need for operating capital is helpful and how investing in providing us with operating capital through grants or through forgivable loans or whatever mechanism that doesn't also require us to then repay that operating capital, that really helps to extend our capacity to do more of the work that we're doing by investing in exactly the sort of development on the technology platform, for example, that I'm describing, because that helps us to scale and also will help us to help other CDFIs to scale. And that's just one example of how operating capital can be helpful. Debt capital is also helpful, obviously, so that we can have capital to lend and relend. And I would say debt capital that is at or below market rate is helpful in particular to CDFIs, because if we can lend at or below what a client would get a loan from a bank for, then that's ultimately helpful to those underserved borrowers to better serve their purpose and to put them in a position for their business to succeed. And I would say that in general, many CDFIs are technology constrained. It's one of the reasons why we began along the journey of developing our platform with the intention of making it useful to other CDFIs as well, because most CDFIs operate in a relatively analog way. Large CDFIs are those that tend to have the sort of resources to either purchase or develop their own technology. And of the 1,400 or so CDFIs, by and large, most are not large CDFIs. Many are very local or hyperlocal or state-based and state-focused CDFIs that just don't have the resources to do what I'm describing and instead put those resources in a very worthwhile effort into services for their clients, but it doesn't necessarily allow them to accomplish mission for a broader population, even within their own community. So we definitely would like to have the resources ourselves to be able to be helpful and encourage bank partners to engage with their CDFI partners around solving for technology constraints as well.
It's interesting. When I was at the bank many years ago, I was making equity-like investments and I was pitching the package to support CDFIs and one in particular. And so we were suggesting equity-like investment and then a four-year charitable grant to go along with it, right? And my bankers were like, what? But I'm like, listen, we must support the infrastructure, right? Because the capital is not enough. And especially depending on how we price, right? Because you have to be able to make the interest spread to support operations. And oftentimes that's not enough. It was definitely something we intentionally structured back then to address some of the challenges that you just indicated. And then you weave in technology. Sounds like a great project to support separately with intention. So we can all be more efficient. So regulatory reform is on its way to us, and many of our bankers are waiting for the release of the new CRA, and I think in Q2, maybe even Q3, we're just not sure. But what I was encouraged by was the refreshed emphasis on CDFIs and MDIs, and I was encouraged and look forward to seeing how that plays out with the new reg. So how are you currently partnering with bankers, and what future opportunities do you see on the horizon, especially as we get a new CRA regulation with more emphasis on mission-based entity partnerships?
Yeah. So today we have partnerships with a number of different bank partners that are associated with referrals for clients that might have applied for some form of credit through the bank and ultimately don't fit the credit criteria of the bank one reason or another. They get referred to us. And in general, with those sorts of referrals, irrespective of the originating bank, is that for the client, there's a couple of things that I see. On the one hand, there's some friction in that process just from a practical perspective. Mm-hmm. Client goes through a bank process, they provide a bunch of information, and then they get a no, and then they get referred to us, and then they have to do that whole process over again to maybe get a no, maybe get a yes, or we don't know necessarily whether as they enter, if they're going to be ultimately qualified for a product with us. So there's a little bit of friction in the best case scenario to get to a yes. And then on the other hand, that's ultimately the bank's client. And that client gets a no from their bank. And potentially what they hear is, you're not right for us, but you might be right for this other entity who has different or maybe lesser standards, is what the client might ultimately hear. So there's a potential for dissatisfaction also on the part of that customer, ultimately with the bank and maybe with us, especially if they get a no. And some of what we've been talking about with our bank partners is exploring a process where there would be one origination process. And if the client doesn't meet the bank partner's needs, perhaps they can originate to our specifications so that there isn't a handoff. It's instead within that original process. So there's some work to do to be able to actually get through to operationalize that. But I'm certainly encouraged by, you know, the willingness and appetite to explore that kind of approach so that there's less friction for the client and so that we get more quickly to ultimately to a yes or potentially to a handoff for technical assistance if that's the right approach for that client.
Right. Oh, it's brilliant. I have been trying to encourage referral partnerships for so long. And this concept of a potential borrower getting two no's in a row with time in between does sound so defeating. So I love this new strategy. I think it'll further serve our communities. And then if it is in fact a no, then there is at least a path forward with technical assistance. Brilliant. So can you share a story about a specific community or individual that has been positively impacted by your work and these partnerships? I'm sure there's many, but if you could pick just one, what one would you share?
Yeah, in terms of an individual borrower, I think about Brown Toy Box, and it's based out of Atlanta, Georgia. And we've done quite a bit of work in Atlanta, Georgia. And so as far as a community, that's certainly a community that we're heavily invested in. But Brown Toy Box comes to mind in particular. They were technically a startup when they came to us. So they were in their third year of operation. And they had a multi-million dollar PO from Walmart and interest in from Target as well. And they could not get a loan from their own. Their own bank felt that it didn't fit their credit profile. It was too big of a risk, even with this multi-million dollar PO from major retailers. And what they needed was $500,000 in working capital so that they could arrange for shipping, materials production. And of course, during the course of the pandemic, all of those things were getting extraordinarily expensive. And they needed the capital relatively quickly so that they could make sure that their product was on store shelves and online in time for the holiday rush. So we looked at their credit profile. We didn't see the same sort of concerns that their bank were a concern, because the age of the company wasn't a concern for us. And of course, they had guaranteed revenue from these major retailers. And we were able to provide them with the capital that they needed, and they were able to get their product on store shelves, and they have an incredible product. It's a STEAM kit that features kids that are the range of backgrounds and ethnicities in science, technology, engineering, and math related roles in these learning kits. And that's a positive product in terms of educationally and for representation. Yes. And it was just it was a good make sense business deal. And it's right. been really successful. It's been great for the business and certainly a big win for us.
Oh, that's wonderful. And this is where we had a general startup that had a great opportunity. And sometimes our standard underwriting is challenging, of course, given the startup nature. What a great story. I am so encouraged by that work. It sounded like a great growth opportunity for them. And the capital helped them with that purchase order and putting their products on the shelves. And what great mission-based outcomes as well. Congratulations. So I am on a mission to inspire more community and regional banks to get more involved with CDFIs. And I, of course, want to support leveraging capital and technical assistance. If a bank hasn't yet approached a CDFI, how would you recommend that they start working with CDFIs? What's their first or second type of step or any recommendations you may have?
In terms of aligning the sorts of capital that a bank has, I would say that there should definitely be an emphasis on different types of grants because those are going to be especially helpful to small and medium-sized CDFIs.
Yeah.
And different sorts of equity or Q2-like products, as well as just debt capital. And also in terms of different sorts of referral partnerships that they might engage in. And frankly, having worked at a bank in the past, there's a lot of human knowledge and capability, and that people power can also be incredibly helpful to CDFIs to identify ways that a bank has individual human talent that might be able to be leveraged by a CDFI to help a CDFI grow without necessarily having to find discrete talent to fill those roles. Those ways can be helpful so that a CDFI doesn't have to spend so much on building its own internal talent while it's growing.
I always say, starting with a grant is always good.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and then build a relationship from there. And even before grant making, reaching out and seeing how bankers can certainly support the deployment of technical assistance, doing some training sessions, then moving on to a grant, and then expanding the relationship. All great
yes. points. I would also say, like in this particular moment in time in which we find ourselves where housing is increasingly unaffordable and home ownership feels unattainable for so many, that for banks that are focused on affordable housing related work, to really think about focusing that work on homeownership, not just rental.
Yes.
That so often when we talk about affordable housing, it's thought of synonymously as rental. And it doesn't have to be. There should be an and homeownership component to that. So having a focus from a bank perspective on funds that have a rate buy down or down payment assistance component, something that actually does help to usher folks into homeownership responsibly, that can be incredibly helpful in engaging with partnerships with CDFIs as well.
And there's just so much opportunity to expand as we move forward, not only with regulatory change, just our desire to move the mark on equity and inclusion and the flow of capital to disadvantaged communities and people. We must get creative, right? And we need to keep thinking differently about this. And partnerships are the best way to go because oftentimes we can go further together.
Yes.
As we come to the end of our discussion, I love to ask the why question, or what initially drew you to this work and what continues to motivate your involvement with CDFIs and community development?
Yeah. So I was an accidental entrant into the financial services world. It didn't occur to me that careers in financial services were a thing. I'm an anthropology grad. So having been in the more traditional financial services arena, I certainly noticed that it was a space that was relatively homogenous in terms of its representation of the changing demographic of the country. And that doesn't have to be the case. And I think in the CDFI space, what I have noticed is that there's a passionate focus on serving community and on serving the underserved or communities of disinvestment and on addressing systemic issues that maybe the traditional financial services, mainstream financial services aren't necessarily discreetly focused on. So I appreciate the opportunity within the CDFI space to use the acumen that I have learned through my financial services career in a manner that addresses the needs of communities that look very much like me, and frankly, to recruit and grow talent that's reflective of the community, as well as has the sort of business acumen to help the community, because it's really the definition of a career field in an industry that, where you can do well by doing good. And I think that there's oftentimes, especially for young folks, as they're entering into where they're going to do professionally, they feel like they have to make a trade-off that if you're going to do good things, you're just going to never make any money. And if you're going to do well financially, you're not going to do things that fuel your heart and your passion. And this is a space where those two marry very well. So I like what I do. I feel passionately connected to what I do. And it also is able to afford, you know, me a life where I am, can make ends meet. The CDFI industry is definitely a place of livable wages. I'm very happy that and grateful that I get to do this work professionally and work with so many passionately talented people.
Yes, we're so glad that you're in this space and that you're leading the way for new innovation, leveraging technology, and serving our communities in unique ways. So thank you so much for your commitment and all that you do. I'll look forward to catching up as you roll out your initiatives.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. It was really great talking with you.
The pleasure was mine.
Well, that's a wrap. I hope you found this episode inspiring, and my sincere hope is that you find one simple concept or tip to take back to your work to elevate our collective commitment to our local communities. And if you are a banker responsible for a portion of the CRA program, or you are the CRA officer, you may want to consider joining the CRA Hub. You will join your colleagues in weekly activities to take a deeper dive into community development concepts and best practices. Check out cratoday.com/hub to learn more. Until the next CRA podcast episode, take care of you and yours. Bye for now.